This is Bob Andelman, and today on Mr. Media, I'm taking you back in time to November 26, 1983, and my telephone interview with AC/DC lead singer Brian Johnson. This is not my best work, although maybe it was for 1983 when I was just a year out of college. I could also blame a painful sore throat, which you'll hear mentioned. But Brian was a prince through it all, and even through the less than optimal recording quality, I think that still comes across. Stick around. The very first music my son, Charlie, ever heard was Highway to Hell by AC/DC as we drove home from the hospital. No kidding. My wife still complains about it.
Bob?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I'll put Brian on now.
Thank you, Fifa.
Okay, hold on.
Hello, Bob.
Brian, how do you do?
How do you do, me son?
I love the sound of that. Never know what you're hiding.
Gosh,
I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me this afternoon.
No problem yet?
Excuse me?
No problem.
Listen, I want to ask you something. I got something real burning on my mind I want to start with.
Yeah?
I've been sick with a sore throat all week, and I was thinking about talking to a singer.
Yeah.
you had to put that emphasis in there. What I'm wondering, I'm thinking to myself, my God, if I had to sing 5-6 nights of the week and go out there, and, I mean, there's all these people depending on you, and you get yourself a sore throat or a cold or something, how do you deal with that?
There's not much you can do about it. You're just stuck there, you know. I don't take anything at all there, Bob. I never ever have done, you know. I usually find if I do suck on one of these throat tablets or whatever, they usually make you worse.
Oh, yeah.
If you're going to sing, especially.
Huh.
They usually make your throat very raw.
Uh-huh.
So I don't usually bother, and I just leave it, you know. But, you know, as you see, if you're going up there and there's like all those people there and you get up, there's nothing, nobody can help you.
Yeah, well,
it's just you.
I gather there have been times when you've had to go through that.
Oh, definitely, you know, the times when you've just felt like you couldn't do it. And you just got to go on and just try your hardest, you know.
I was reading it. You had spoken to someone. I was reading a couple of old stories that were done on the band, and you had spoken to someone, and excuse me, you refused to describe yourself as a singer or a screamer, or maybe that was their description.
I just always just sort of think of myself as another instrument in the band, really, rather than a singer, you know.
Uh-huh.
Especially in a rock band, you know. Because all you're doing is complimenting the band, but, well, whatever, you know, you're just like another part of the band. But that's probably true, what I said.
Don't make me laugh, it hurts.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, it sounds like you do.
Oh,
the Florida weather not agreeing with you, huh?
Well, it's just coming from cold weather straight into Florida. Has an effect.
Yeah, I bet. I bet. Do you have any, I don't know, when you were growing up or anything, did you have any kind of actual training for singing? Or when was the first time you actually decided to give it a try?
Well, not really. It's just when, you know, like when I started work as an apprentice and all the guys wanted to start bands.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just that I came from a big family and I couldn't afford to buy a kit of drums or a guitar or anything. So it was cheaper to buy a microphone.
Is that right?
And that's how I ended up starting to sing.
I'll be
true.
How big was your family?
Well, it was two brothers and a sister.
Huh.
But that's big enough in England, you know, because you couldn't really afford anything, you know.
Do you remember the first time that you sang? Do you remember how old you were?
Professionally?
Amateur, professionally, either one.
The first time I sang, I was in a church choir.
Is that right?
Yeah. I was just a kid, you know, I was about 11 or something.
And what about professionally?
Professionally, the first time I sang was in a youth club with a band. I was about 15.
Uh-huh.
We just got the band together. I think we sang 4 songs all night. About 2 hours.
Was that kind of a Well, if you'd sang with the choir, but I guess it wasn't as shocking an experience, but it's a different kind of music.
Ah, yeah. It's more like lift music when you're singing in a choir.
Do you, did you pick up anything from the time that maybe you were singing in the choir as far as strengthening or preserving your vocals or stretching them that you still use of?
I wasn't even thinking about it at that age, you know.
Yeah.
I was doing the same as everybody else.
Oh, I see.
Singing along to all the songs, you know, and, you know, trying to, you know what it's like, you know, you just...
All right, Brian, you stand here. Bob, you stand here.
That was it.
Brian, try not to drown Bob out.
You just try to, you know, when I first got a microphone, it was a different thing altogether, you know?
Mm. You were with a band before AC/DC called Geordies, is it?
That's right, yeah.
Is that G-E-O-R-D-I-E-S?
Yeah, without the S.
Without the S.
Yeah.
What can you tell me about that band? I'm not...
Well, it was just a band that we got together in England and had quite substantial success in England and Europe mm-hmm. for about 12 months and then we split up.
It happens.
We like it, you know.
Was there any recording with Geordie?
Oh, yeah, we had quite a few hits in England and Europe with the band, you know.
Okay.
And... I think it went for about a year and a half, 2 years at most.
Was that band still together when you were first approached AC/DC?
They just got back together again after I joined the band.
Oh, I see.
After all those years, you know. They were, good musicians, you know. They're good lads.
I guess it's probably the most obvious thing I want to ask you about is joining AC/DC and the circumstances. I guess it wasn't a very easy thing to come in after.
Yeah, it wasn't. You know, it was a lot of pressure there, you know, but I mean, I enjoyed, you know, it was a challenge as well. So, you know, but the great thing was that all the kids and all that were great. You know, they really helped. Made us feel at home, you know, the band made us feel at home.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, it just felt so natural, you know, Bob?
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying it was just one of them things, you know, that, you know, a million to one chance, you know.
What were the circumstances that led to Brian Johnson becoming the front man, the lead singer for AC/DC?
I just got a phone call one night.
Mm-hmm.
And, they said they'd phone back the next day, which they did, and arranged for me to come down, which I did, and then it all sort of took off from there.
So were they were familiar with you from the Geordies, or did you know any of them? Or
not really. It was, you know, they just heard me name from other people, and they just thought that, you know, it was worth giving me a telephone call just to. You know, just to try us out.
Oh, so you did actually audition for the band?
Yeah, I went down and had a sing with the guys, and that was it.
Oh, very good. You are English, as you just said.
That's right, yeah.
And AC/DC is mostly, or all, or the rest of the band, I should say. Of course, you're part of AC/DC now.
Yeah.
The rest of them are Australian. Is that right?
One Australian in the band.
There isn't an Australian in the band? Where?
There's Cliff's from England.
Where did
Simon, the new drummer, he's from England.
Now, where did I get the idea that they were Australian?
Well, because they did originate from Australia, you see.
Oh, I see. It's
Malcolm and Angus were born in Scotland, but they emigrated to Australia when they were about 10 years old.
I'll be darned.
And, therefore, they were brought up in Australia, and the band started in Australia. Even Bon was from Scotland originally.
Hmm.
And the only true Australian in the band was Phil Rudd. But Phil's left now, you see.
Right.
So Simon's come in, and he's English.
But,
I mean, I wouldn't call us an English band, you know, because we're just from, you know, we're never there, you know, we're never in England, you know.
So... Oh, that's
interesting. His world.
A world band. All right. While we're sitting here talking, my roommate just scribbled me a note And I'm wondering if you know anything about this. He said that Don had admired your voice for some time. Is that...
Well, that was one of the lucky circumstances leading to me getting the gig, you know. Bond's band had supported Geordie.
Oh, yeah?
About 7 years before.
Uh-huh.
And he told the guys, you know, he'd obviously said something to the guys about me, and that was one of the things they remembered, you know. That's why they tried to sort of track me down, because I was in the wilderness up in Newcastle somewhere. I was just playing in local bands, you know.
Newcastle?
Yeah, around the clubs.
Huh.
So I was just a little semi-pro band.
Do you recall it where and that the first time that you went on stage with the band?
Yes, it was in a little place in Belgium.
Hmm.
And I can't even remember the name. It was some real small place, you know. They just wanted a sort of couple of small gigs to sort of break us in.
Right.
Before we came to America.
What were you thinking about as you went on stage that first time? I mean,
I don't know. My heart was racing, my pulse was going, the adrenaline was going. It was probably the same feeling before you set off for a moonshot or something. The same feeling.
Did it?
I was terrified.
How did you deal with that when you got out there? I mean.
Well, once you get out there, it's okay. It's the waiting that's the worst. That's the worst bit. And
the old waiting is the hardest part.
Yeah, yeah. Once you get on, it's okay. You know, you just forget all about it and just start. You know.
I don't mean to linger on this a lot, but it is kind of interesting. Did you feel that there was going to be, or in the beginning, was there resistance from the band's older fans?
No, that's what I was really lucky. You know.
Yeah.
They were great. And they held up banners and saying good luck Brian and all this. It was excellent.
Well, I think it's interesting in that I was reading over the reviews of the band since you joined, and I guess the first album you worked on was Back in Black.
Yeah.
Right? The reviews have been pretty good, actually. Most of them have complimented you for adding a fire. Kind of lighting a fire under the band.
I paid all those guys. That was all bribery and corruption.
Is that right? Oh, boy.
I'm sure it was.
It's good to know even the big ones can still be bought, you know?
Definitely. That's nice of them, though.
Makes it a little easier to get by. How much of the stage show now is... obviously, when you started, I imagine you were doing a lot of the older AC/DC material, but since you've joined, the albums between Back in Black and For Those About to Rock and the new one, there's a lot of songs that become just as popular in that those couple albums as were in the six that came before.
Yeah. Well, that's the difficult job, though, Bob. You don't know what to bloody pick.
Yeah.
And the set, and obviously the set's got longer and longer, and it's nearly up to 2 hours. And that's a long time to sing rock and roll, you know, and play rock and roll and keep the memento going. But, you know, we enjoy it. So, it doesn't hurt, you know. It doesn't hurt us to do it. We just, you know,
so
you know, we keep on doing it.
You're stretching as opposed to...
Well, we've got to, you know, because there's always somebody who's got a favourite song and it's just getting harder and harder. The gun is out, you don't know what to do.
Well, that kind of leads to what I was wondering about, is if, you know, you've established a good number of songs under your own belt since you've joined that have your own, I don't know what you'd call it, I guess kind of a signature kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I wondered if you might have been doing less of the older songs.
We're always trying to make a good, fair and even sort of selection, you know?
Hmm.
So everybody gets a chance to listen to like songs from nearly as many albums as we can fit in, you know?
Huh. I'll be darned. Let's see what I want. A little later, I wanted to ask you about a couple of songs in particular, maybe just get a couple of comments from you. Move to that. But I'm wondering, the heavy metal is the band represents. I mean, AC/DC is what, in its 10th year now? Or coming up on its 10th year?
The 10th year for AC/DC, yeah.
So it really is, I mean, the band has been there as the metal thing has come, gone, and come back again, I guess.
Yeah.
And it's always attracted a lot of strangeness, kind of, and different reactions from different people. I'm sure you're well familiar with some parents, how they react to the music. You're laughing. Do you think any of the parents have any justification for being concerned about the kids getting overly involved with the metal?
I think they're more scared of the kids at the concerts more than anything about the music.
Mm.
You know, but I mean, the same used to happen when Elvis Presley used to tour around, you know?
True.
Kids, or the Beatles, think getting interested. As for the music, they don't listen to it, so they don't know what they're talking about anyway. But it's a thing that happens just in life, you know?
Well,
the same parents were getting told off by their parents when they went to see Elvis Presley or the Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
And so it goes.
Well,
ad infinitum.
I'm curious. Now, the paper I work for is, you know, it's a big family paper. It's bigger papers in this area. Is there anything you would say, you know, if you were speaking, if you found yourself in the position of speaking to a room full of just parents who were concerned? They weren't screaming you down, but they were concerned about their kids. Maybe not so much that they thought that AC/DC was such a horrible band or anything, you know, a bad influence, but, you know, they see the kids dressing in all this leather and the spikes and that kind of stuff. Is there anything you could say to them?
Well, I would say, first of all, it's just the kids we have just letting loose, you know, busting loose and going against the grain, you know, just for the hell of it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they probably don't want to know themselves, but they probably just have a good time doing it, you know? I'd wonder what we're doing in that room talking to me. some of the parents are worse than the kids, you know, by kicking up a stink in the first place, when they hit the stink there. You know, they're concerned about something that's not really important, you know. I think the first thing they should do in America is worry about stopping their kids taking drugs.
Mm.
Never mind rock and roll, that's got nothing to do with it. You know, you've got a real bad drug scene here in your schools. I think that's the first thing they should start talking about rather than kids coming to concerts. You know, it's weird.
Have you found yourself in the couple of years you've been with the band in any kind of position where you've been confronted by a problem like that? Any kind of parental or you came into an area like some of the...
Well, not really. I mean, Salt Lake City, you know, we played there before now, and we expected all kinds of problems, but it was great.
Hmm.
It was all them rockin' Mormons, eh?
The Osmond family rockers,
It was great, you know, so it's just... I've never really had any problems at all, you know?
All right. What about the last 2 or 3 years have been there's been a whole lot of... other bands that are getting a lot more prominence than they might have 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
The Iron Maidens, Judas Priest, and Def Leppard. Would it be fair to say that AC/DC now, I mean, it's been around, the band's been around for several years, you've been with it now 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
The band kind of falls in between, let's say, a Judas Priest and a Def Leppard, kind of, it's... You hope not. What I'm thinking of is in terms of,
I know what you mean. You mean the music? No. Well,
yeah.
You could be right, because we're just rock and roll, you know?
Right.
And we're just simple, straight-ahead rock and roll. I know what you mean, like Judas Priest of heavy metal.
Right.
And Def Leppard are commercial rock and roll.
Exactly. That's exactly what I mean.
Yeah, well, I suppose you could be right, in a way. I mean, we're just rock and roll.
All right, now...
I don't care.
Now, in the sense that you immediately reacted that you hope not, what sense would you hope not to be between the two of those?
What sense would we hope not?
Well... You obviously don't want to be described as being between a Judas Priest and a Def Leppard. Obviously, I mean, I'll tell you what, the radio commercials that were leading up to the band's appearance tonight were like, hide your parents, lock up the kids, you know, that kind of thing.
Oh.
AC/DC's coming to town, you know, is that...
That's all fun and hype, isn't it? I mean, it always is, but the... I mean, if you come to one of our gigs, you won't see a piece of leather... or stood anywhere in sight. I mean, literally.
Okay.
And on the other hand, you won't see any spandex trousers or inside either.
That would be a pleasant
You just see five guys on stage playing rock and roll, and that's it. You know, Bob?
Mm-hmm.
Simple as that.
All right, let me ask you about some of the songs.
Yeah.
I wanted to get maybe a line or two. Most of these are ones that have come out, excuse me, since you've been with the band, and maybe one or two from before.
Yeah.
And what I'm looking for is maybe just a line or two about, I don't know, something, whatever strikes you.
Right.
It's important. What about For Those About to Rock?
For Those About to Rock, it was an idea like, you know, the Queen of England or, you know, whatever, the royal family. A 21-gun salute is the highest form of compliment you can pay to anybody.
Mm.
And we wanted to do that for the kids. You know, like, 21, you know, sort of.
Right.
And that's exactly what it is, you know. It's for the kids.
A couple of people have described that as kind of a new anthem, or one of many anthems for the band. Is that?
Yeah, well, it has been going down that way. The kids know it more and more, and it's great when you see them, you know.
What about Let's Get It Up?
Let's Get It Up. Total self.
All right, let's move on. Night of the Long Knives.
Night of the Long Knives is, well, you know, if you know your history well, you know when Hitler did his bit with, you know, the night, you know, when he killed all these people, it's got nothing to do with that.
Okay. Uh-huh.
But it just means that what other people can do to other people.
They
really set their mind to it. How bad people can be. It's got a few meanings, actually, you know. It's not that deep, you know.
Okay. Well, that's all right. I'm not necessarily looking for anything to be deep. I'm just looking for, you know. You Shook Me All Night Long, which is
just a good, fun rock and roll song about them.
Took the words out of my mouth.
About a woman, you know, and a man.
Okay. What are you, what is the band playing off the new album? In concert.
Of the new album, we play Guns for Hire,
mm-hmm.
Houses on Fire, and Flick of the Switch.
Flick of the Switch, which is the title.
Yeah.
What can you tell me about This House is on Fire?
This House is on Fire is basically the same sort of thing, you know, like a guy, a woman, or you could be talking about the audience.
Mm-hmm.
By saying, you know, this house is on fire means, you know, it's red hot. You know, just ready to go, you know.
Got it.
And that's all that means, you know.
What about the title song of the new album, Flick of the Switch?
Flick of the Switch,
what did that come from?
Well, if you listen to the verses now, it's just about how a woman, a real gorgeous woman, or whatever, can really turn somebody on, just a flick of the switch, you know.
Mm. Got it.
And where the switch is, you've got to find. Or whatever, you know, or it could be the other way around, you know, with a man.
Not too hard to figure.
Uh-huh.
Oh boy, excuse me. Are you all, I think you toured like 8 months the first year you were with the band.
Yeah.
It was like a solid 8 months. Are you still touring at that kind of rate?
Oh yeah.
Really?
Yeah, we've been quite busy.
When did this tour start and when does it end?
Well, this tour started in September, but before that, you know, we did the album, and before that we rehearsed the album. We had a couple of months off, and then before that, we'd sort of done Europe and Japan and all that, you know.
Mm, boy.
So, and then this one, next year, we're probably doing Europe again and Japan. Goes on forever.
Was it kind of fun to acquire so many fans by joining the band? I mean,
well, it's just amazing, you know. It still stuns me how many countries in the world know about, you know, even Iron, you know, the Iron Curtain countries,
mm-hmm.
who sort of love the band, you know. It's always sort of amazing, you know.
Mm.
How many people are into the band, you know, and we haven't even been there.
Yeah.
You know, like Italy and Yugoslavia, Hungary, in South America, Brazil, Argentina. No, that is strange, Argentina, but yeah,
like, you know, I think I neglected to ask, what part of England are you from?
I'm from Newcastle.
Newcastle?
Yeah.
Okay, I want to get that right, give credit where credit is due. Okay. Well, I think I got through everything I wanted to
Very good, Bob. Very good.
Yeah, I really appreciate your time, Brian.
Oh, it's all right, Ned. Hey, brother. Hey, brother at all.
I love that accent. I never get tired of hearing an Englishman talk.
Yeah, you know. I've been trying to lose it for the last... I don't know, well, for the last 6 months since when you was coming to the States, because nobody can understand a word.
Well, I think I've spoken to enough of your countrymen at this point that I've got a better feel for it than I did when I started. So, thank you very much.
It's a pleasure, Bob.
And enjoy the tour in the country as much as you can.
Okay, well, we'll see you.
All right. Take care.
See you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Is recorded live before a studio audience of second-rate ballplayers who, whenever they get to third base, have visions of meatloaf in their heads, keep swearing on their mother's graves, and screaming, "I'll love you to the end of time!" in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida.